PBS Kids opens worlds of possibilities for all children, thanks to PBS stations and viewers like you.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
City, and I'm on my way to a special neighborhood where they create today the fashions that you and I will be wearing tomorrow. Now, I could walk there, or take a bus, or even a taxi, but the fastest way to travel in this town is to go under it, on the subway. Come on.
That's a nice one. Yes, you can carry it. Thank you.
This is my train. Let's go for a ride. Under the ground. Not much scenery to look at while you're riding down here, which makes it the perfect place to read. Here's just the book for some subway reading. It's a story about a young girl's trip into New York City on a very important errand. It's called The Purple Coat.
The Purple Coat by Amy Hest. Pictures by Amy Schwartz. Read by Jack Gilford. Every fall, when the leaves start melting into pretty purples and reds, Mama says, "Coat time, Gabrielle." And they ride two trains to Grandpa's tailor shop in the city. Grandpa's shop is on the 28th floor in a fancy office building. The elevator is too fast and too crowded. This year, you ought to get gold buttons, Mama says. Big gold buttons on your navy blue coat. I think a purple coat would be much nicer, Gabby says. Purple, Mama laughs. What's funny about purple, demands Gabby, puffing out her lower lip. There's nothing funny about it, admits Mama, but navy blue coats are what you always get. Gabby makes a face and sighs. Greetings. Grandpa hugs them both in two woolly arms. Gabby moves toward the neat rows of fabric on the wall opposite. She drags red-painted fingertips across the rainbow of colors stacked in open shelves. Hello, purple, she whispers, pausing on the prettiest shade of all. Hungry girls? Magician style, Grandpa uncovers a platter of sandwiches from the corner deli. Mama laughs, up to your old tricks again, Pop. She eats a sandwich, then rushes off to do her city shopping. When she is gone, Grandpa turns to Gabby. Salami or pastrami? Salami, she answers, the same as always. Grandpa and Gabby sit side by side on Grandpa's big oak desk. Everywhere are pencils and pens and little scraps of paper. Grandpa bites into a sandwich and makes a little mmm sound, which means he likes it very much. Want a bite of the leanest pastrami in town? He asks. Gabby shakes her head. I'll stick to what I know I like, salami. Once in a while, it's good to try something new. How else do you know if you like it? Next time, maybe. Now business. Grandpa points to a half dozen bolts of dark fabric. I've pulled all the navy blues. Dark and lighter, nearly sapphire, smoky navy, hazy navy. I want purple, Gabby interrupts. Purple? But you always get a navy coat. This time I want purple. Grandpa frowns. I suppose you ask your mother? Not exactly, Gabby says slowly. She said navy blue coats are what I always get. Grandpa marches past the desk. Gabby marches behind. Purple, he murmurs, and he seems to be talking to the air. A beautiful purple coat down to my ankles with purple buttons and a big pocket on the side. It must have a purple hood, she goes on, and a pleat in back to make it easy when I run. I'm a fast runner, Grandpa. But a navy coat is such a classic, Gabrielle. Once in a while, it's good to try something new, she answers. You said so yourself. Grandpa thinks. Then he says, your mother wanted a tangerine-colored dress once. Tangerine, Gabby shrieks. Did you make her one? Finally, I did. Suddenly, Grandpa clicks two fingers in the air. This year, I will make you something very special, he announces. A coat that is navy blue on one side and purple on the other. Reversible. Gabby jumps high in the air. Let's make the purple side first. Grandpa measures her arms, her waist, and her chest. When there is nothing left to measure, Gabby inspects Grandpa's work. Mama comes back at 4. How's the navy coat coming along, she asks. Grandpa coughs a bit. Say, Pop, that is some gorgeous purple. Mama fingers the yards of fabric draped across the cutting board. Grandpa clears his throat. Gabby and I have decided on a different sort of coat this year, he says quietly. Different how? Gabby twirls in the mirror until she's dizzy. It's reversible, she hears herself blurt out. Navy on one side and purple on the other. Pop, Gabrielle gets a navy blue coat. Always, Mama says firmly. You wanted a tangerine dress once, don't you remember? It had tangerine pockets and tangerine sleeves that puffed near the shoulders and tiny tangerine buttons. Mama shakes her head and a frilly tangerine collar. Oh, it was so unlike me to want a dress like that. Once in a while, it's good to try something new. A person gets tired of the same old thing all the time. And it's such a pretty shade of purple, Mama. Gorgeous. You said so yourself. Remember tangerine, Grandpa points a finger in the air. Why do I feel outnumbered, Mama sighs. Then she smiles. I have a sneaky suspicion, she says at last. This is going to be the best purple coat ever. Gabby can't believe her ears. You know, there just may be a day or two when I don't feel like purple, she says softly in her worried voice. There just may be, answers Mama. So on those days, Gabrielle, you can turn your sleeves inside out and flip your coat around to navy. And that is just what she decides to do.
Thank you.
This is the Garment District, the clothing capital of America, where you can find almost any look you want. In fact, what you're wearing right this minute was probably designed, displayed, manufactured, or shipped right from here. So the last thing anyone in this neighborhood would say is, I haven't got a thing to wear. And you can't find just the right look for you, don't worry. There's probably someone creating it right now. In fact, not far from here is a very special school called the Fashion Institute of Technology, where young designers get their start.
Okay. Ta-da. All right, now put the flowers. We want the flowers more in the front. Yes.
It's final exam time, and that means a fashion show. Each student produces a garment to be judged.
About the staging, we have to sell the garments to the critics out in the audience, so we're going to have to organize and direct how these garments are going to be presented out there, right?
That's right, David. So it's very, very important.
Can we have the models run through the music to see how well they walk to it and how well it coordinates?
Yes, Julie, you could do that on Wednesday.
As the big day approaches, students meet with instructors to go over final details.
Okay, thank you.
Young designers like Julie Bliss and David Berg have worked hard all year.
Do I want to use a black and white zipper?
But there's still a lot to do before the show.
I'm designing a ski outfit right now. So the most important element to this garment is that it fits the body, gives little wind resistance, and will stretch and move with the body. A lot of designers won't start designing until they have their fabric in hand and they're looking at it because they can picture how the material can best be used. The most important part of designing a garment is transferring the idea that you've had in your head onto a piece of paper. Once you have it on paper, you can visualize it better and you can play around with it. These designs don't always work out the first time. You may throw away 10, 15 pieces of paper before you finally stumble on a design that catches your eye and that most closely fits the mental picture that you had. And from there, you create the garment. How's it going, Julie?
Good. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Just busy?
Yep. Once I have my finished sketch, I have to figure out how I'm going to get it from the sketch to the fabric. And we lay out a flat piece of paper, which would be the outline of each of the individual pieces of the garment. And then you take your scissors and you follow the edge of that pattern exactly. The live model that I'm using in the fashion show is a size 6, so now that I've cut out my pant pattern, I'm going to pin it to a mannequin, which is also a size 6, so I can get the fit of the pants. And that's where I'll make any adjustments. If I want to take the leg in a little bit more, I'll pin it tighter until I get the look that I want. I get to see what the garment is going to look like when it's on a person. When I get to the sewing part of the garment, it's exciting for me because I'm seeing the pieces literally come together. It's like creating a piece of art. So you have to be careful that you don't get too carried away, but you just keep sewing and make sure the seams are matched up, and it's exciting.
I like to sew because if I'm making something and I've started from a drawing, I like to finish it up, do everything, from the birth of it on paper to the finished garment. So when the garment's done, turn this way a little bit, you'll have this effect right here. A profusion of colors.
It should be cute. Now you just have to finish it.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay,
of course, my model is going to be a lot taller, and it might look a lot different on her.
Maybe it's okay.
Over the semester, our class has gotten very close, and we learned to criticize each other and take the comments, and if they're valuable, we might, you know, change our design a little bit according to someone's opinion. And I think everybody's very honest, and if someone didn't like something, they would tell you, because everybody, it's like a team effort, and everybody wants this show to go over really well. Part of designing is seeing the finished product. Seeing that end product is so gratifying.
It's one thing about New York. It's full of characters, interesting, distinctive people. Everyone has his or her own style. Just look around. You'll see what I mean.
Most of us have our hands full creating ourselves every day. But can you imagine creating fictional characters every day and deciding on their personalities, wardrobe, and style? That's what Steve Hansen does. He's a very talented artist from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and each of his characters begins with a drawing.
I'm a sculptor. This is the beginning of making that drawing into a three-dimensional figure. Doesn't look like it yet, but this will be the head. Right now I'm building a skeleton that holds the sculpture up while I'm working on it. This is an armature. It's the skeleton that holds the sculpture that I'm building. The reason I build the armature is to establish the attitude of the body before I fatten him up. Once I have the arms, legs, head, and whatnot on, I have to adjust them so it will come out looking like who I think he is and what I think he's doing. And he's ready to get some flesh on these bones. Mache is paste and newspaper, and I learned about it third grade like everyone else. It seems to have a kind of lumpy life of its own. It's a fast way of making something lively. Also a fast way of making something big. It's my hope that every sculpture I make has humanity in common, and by that I mean that when you look at it, and if I've really done my job well, it kind of looks back, or it seems somewhat alive. And to do that, it kind of has to remind you either of a tiny bit of yourself, or in the case of this guy, I hope not, I kind of go through the world collecting people. I mean, obviously, then it gets filtered back through what I'm thinking when I go ahead and make a sculpture out of it. So in a sense, they're all a part of me, or at least the world around me. Well, this is the part where his personality starts emerging. It's like if I wanted to make him sort of, you know, angry, I could sort of put in a heavy brow like that with the eye under it later. I do like this corner on his mouth, though. I hadn't quite intended it, but I think I'll keep it. It's this brown paper that holds everything together. Brown paper is essentially like putting a skin on the whole thing. You want this guy to look surprised, so I'll open up his eyeball quite a bit, like it's a real shock. Starting to talk like it has a personality, it must be working. Primary thing that all of these sculptures I make have in common is that they're all human. I guess I'd say that a successful piece is one that when I look at its face, it kind of looks back at me. Generally, when people see my work, they respond with either laughter or embarrassment, which I take as meaning it's struck some familiar chord. Also, they very often tell me that they have an uncle who looks just like that. Most people would know better than to do something like this, but not this guy.
Hey, watch out for that manhole over there.
Blue velvet.
Hey, how you doing over there? Oh, I haven't seen you in a long time.
Oh, over Chris.
Here's my reason for coming to the Garment District today. This shop, custom-made coats. I have a special order to pick up. While I jump inside, here are three finely tailored books you might want to try on for size. Each one will fit you to a T. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Hello, my name is Yotam. Did it ever occur to you that every single famous artist in the whole world started out as a kid? Of course they did. Here's one I read about. His name is Pablo Picasso. Pablo Picasso, the world-famous artist, was called Pablito when he was young. He was not an ordinary kid. He looked at many things closely, and he noticed that everything in nature was one of a kind. He painted on the walls of his house, and he even painted his sister with egg yolks. His parents couldn't figure out what to do with him until his father finally discovered Pablito was an artist. I enjoyed reading this book. It was fun finding out what a famous person was like as a kid. I recommend that you read it too.
Hi, my name is Allison. Have you ever wondered how a book is made? If you have, I think you should read How a Book is Made by Leakey. Did you know that it takes a lot of time to make a book? There are many steps involved, and people too, like the author, the artist, printer, and salesperson. The author writes the story, the artist draws the pictures. Personally, that's my favorite job. I really think you'll enjoy reading this book. Why don't you pick it up at your local library? It's there waiting for you.
Hi, I'm Heather, and I just read this great book called The Goat and the Rug. This is a fun and interesting story. The two characters are Glenn May, a Navajo weaver, and Geraldine, her goat. One day, Glenn May decided to make a rug out of her goat's hair. Glenn May took her scissors and cut off Geraldine's wool. Geraldine fell naked. The story is really neat because it's all told by Geraldine the goat. As you can see, the goat in this rug has a special meaning. So why don't you check it out? The Goat in the Rug by Geraldine.
Well, what do you think?
Not bad, huh? It's got great lines. I love the material. Fits like a glove. And it's got a certain kind of quiet elegance, don't you think? But you know, sometimes when I wake up in the morning and I'm feeling just, I don't know, a little different, all I have to do is this. Now this is different. See you next time.
Today's Reading Rainbow books are The Purple Coat by Amy Hest, illustrated by Amy Schwartz, published by Four Winds Press. Pablo Picasso by Ibi Lepschke, illustrated by Paolo Cardoni, translated by Howard Roger McLean, published by Barron's Educational Series, Incorporated. How a Book is Made by Aliki, published by Thomas Y. Crowell. The Goat in the Rug by Charles L. Blood and Martin Link, illustrated by Nancy Winslow Parker, published by Four Winds Press.